Hello, everyone. Welcome to our 25th episode of But Why Though, a philosophy-themed comedy podcast with comedian Josh Carter
and philosopher Nayancy Lopez.
And today we're joined by philosopher, author, Dr. Daniel Campos, philosopher at Brooklyn College.
And one of my friends, he's a veteran on the New York City comedy scene. You may have seen him at Caroline's, where he made it far in March Madness, March Comedy Madness, which is like a, think about basketball, but with comedians. It's pretty dope. Quan Wiggins is joining us today.
Welcome, guys. So today we're going to be talking about Plato's Symposium, and specifically Socrates' dialogue with Diotima. So I'm not sure if a lot of our listeners are familiar with this story, but we'll give you guys a brief overview, and you guys are free to welcome and comment and share what you guys think about this too.
And if you have any stories that this reminds you of, feel free. Let's hear your personal anecdotes too.
So their conversation is focused on love. So they start off, Diotima explains how Eros, or love, desires to have good and beautiful things that will last forever. So they see Eros, they see love back in ancient Greece as a spirit. So it's sort of like a spirit that took over you for a certain amount of time, and then it sort of could go away, could come back. So it's not always the type of love that we're thinking of, but so just keep that in mind while we talk about this. And this is also what we humans look for in order to be happy. So then Socrates asks, what is the real purpose of love? So I wanted to ask you guys just a broad general question. What do you guys think is the purpose of love? And do you agree that all humans seek to have good and beautiful things in order to be happy? Is this part of love? What do you think, Josh? We'll start with you.
I don't know. I think love is just the idea of love is like keeping your passion for building something, whether that be a relationship with someone, like a career. Like there are all sorts of different types of love. I guess I could start with something super broad like that, so someone could take it and run in any lane that they want with it. What do you guys think?
Well, maybe I'll go. I think part of what's interesting about reading Plato or any of the ancient philosophers is that in English we use the word love for many different types of love that they distinguished in Greek. So in the Symposium, the form of love is Eros. What I happen to think, we can elaborate later, but what I happen to think is that Eros is an important form of love. It's very central to human life and experience and to a happy life, but it's not the only form of love that we need in order to be happy. So erotic desire, the erotic pursuit, is important, but maybe not the only one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what are your thoughts, Quan?
I don't know. When I was just taking a look at how they were breaking this down, it made me think of more like the, I guess, romantic love or whatever. Mm-hmm. Clearly, there are more types, but I guess this could apply to all of them, really. I feel like love is dependency. You know what I mean? Or knowing something's gonna be the same every time you go to it. It's gonna give you that same type of satisfaction. And you knowing that it's always gonna be there and it's always gonna be that same experience, that's what grows that emotion of love, in my opinion.
And then ironically, it always falls all apart at some point. Like, it's not the same, and then you have to, it's like a challenge, right? Like, whether it's like your career or relationship, there's always going to be some kind of challenge that's like a wrench that when you're expecting it to be the same, you're going to come and it's like, shit, it's not the same. Now I'm going to have to fight through this shit. And it's going to be a tough fight. But then getting through that fight and maintaining that cycle, I think, is like the key to like maintaining that love and keeping it going.
Yeah, true. But that fix, we got to have it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I understand exactly what you're saying. The ideal, like the ideal thought of it versus then like when you get in and like sometimes like the just the consequences of just being around someone and having to like live with them for a while, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Well, Yeah, I think it depends on what kind of love we're talking about. If it's romantic love, then you might be looking for something different than when you love creating some kind of art, for example. So there's different types of love for sure. And this is also what she tries to explain later. She talks about how maybe we only look for certain things at first when we think of love that are physical, when maybe we should be looking for other things. And do you guys think that we do seek good and beautiful things in other people or in general? Is that part of love? Do you think that? Yeah, maybe.
I think so.
But is it
just... Gina, everyone, you always want a nice thing. If you're going shopping for a car, you're not going to come home with like a Chevy Malibu 93 and be excited about it. You want that plush Land Rover 2021. Right. I want that touchscreen extra big in the
car. I think attraction is very important, especially to erotic love, to romantic love. You definitely have to have that experience of attraction. I think part of what happens later is we tend to notice what attracts us right away. And for a good while, 3 months, 6 months, a year, we don't see or overlook the things that are not so attractive. So a question for love is, what do you do when you begin to notice the things that are not so beautiful or good? And maybe that has to do with the constancy that Juan was mentioning, that if you want a long-term sort of love, you have to be willing to give and trust that you will be given that constancy in spite of the ugliness. But initially, I think we need to start with attraction, with some sort of desire. It's felt in the body. I think it can't be done by decree. Like, you can't have a list and then say intellectually, if this person meets these requirements, that's the person I would like. That won't work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say it definitely the physical is important. You know what I mean? Being that we live on a physical plane, you know what I mean, and that we're visual creatures. So seeing something that's pleasing to the eye, it begins the emotional response. So without that initial sight of attraction, I mean, I don't know how you even want to approach a thing. You know what I mean? I don't I don't know how a person without sight goes about like being like, hey man, I love this. Like, I don't know how Stevie Wonder be like, man, you know what? I love this woman right here without seeing her first. I don't know, man.
Well, maybe the senses. I mean, if not, I don't have the experience of,
See, she's wearing a good perfume. She could get Stevie Wonder, you just have to smell good at that point, you know?
Texture.
I mean, I couldn't imagine.
Yeah, if you don't, you can't have dry skin if you're dating Stevie either. You know, you need to wear a lotion and you need to wear perfume, you know? Maybe if you wear some silky clothes too, you'll be prettier to him, you know?
That's why he's love language. Remember, Ray Charles, it was the love of the wrist.
Oh, really?
Remember that Ray Charles, he used to fill out the wrist and be like, knows how he, that's how he picked his women, so.
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
Y'all didn't see the movie?
No, I actually, that's one of these movies I need to go back, that was one of these Oscar movies I just never came around to seeing that I need to go back and watch. I am going to see that though. We actually, what did we just, saw, you know, we were like watching a bunch of old movies like lately and stuff.
There's a famous one with Al Pacino, Scent of a Woman, where the guy Al Pacino, he's a blind man, but he's an excellent tango dancer. And I don't remember very clearly, but he's very seductive, and because he's a good dancer, and the scent of women is very important to him. So
It adapts. Interesting.
So even without sight, there's other senses that take over that make us attracted to someone. So it's always, does it always have to do with our senses? Do you think? I don't know.
I bet you if you looked at the numbers, smell probably is more attractive than even sight.
Really?
Like, if someone smells really bad, even if they look good. Here, let me tell you a story, actually. One time I was...
But the opposite wouldn't work, though.
Let me tell you something, though. I'm a man. This is like a man with a woman, too. So let me tell you something. I was on this thing called Semester at Sea when I was in college, which is like a study abroad trip on like a cruise ship, basically. So one time, this girl and her roommate invited me to her room, and like they were like pretty girls and stuff, but they're like their septic tank was just broken, and their rooms literally smelled like a sewer, and it was so gross I could not stay in there, and I couldn't like keep a straight face and be polite. I had to like get out of there, you know. And like ever since then, my brain then made tied them to that shit smell whenever I saw them on the boat. But I'm not trying to say that in a mean way. I'm not like a mean guy.
They come them shit.
But it was just it's probably not even their fault. It probably wasn't even their shit I was smelling. It was just like some maintenance problem on the boat. But because of like your senses just make a connection sometimes. I don't know. Even they were good looking girls too. They weren't like, I don't know.
I mean, you wouldn't have thought to go to a different location or Febreze them or nothing. You just like instantly the shit is permanent and you can't do nothing.
They'll have to take me to like a rose garden or something to make. No, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, they must not have been that cute if you gave up that easily.
Well, I definitely.
They're like good looking.
I was definitely turned.
Yeah,
they weren't like perfect.
They weren't that good looking.
They weren't like perfect tens, but they were like they were good looking girls. You know, I'm not saying they were.
That's why you gave up.
But like if I walked into a super messy room, like a guy's super messy room, that would definitely turn me off. I think so, but
a lot of girls are like that, and a lot of girls are not like that too.
Yeah.
Like it, I guess it just depends on people's like tastes too. But yeah, like that anything that kind of makes your brain like kind of think of dirt and like,
oh my god,
like smelliness. I don't know. That's just a thing about me. I don't.
But that wasn't anything that they did.
Does this sound bad? I can't tell. But
well, move on.
I think all five senses are involved. Like especially if you're gonna want to keep sexual intimacy and erotic intimacy interesting and passionate, you know, over the long term, like you're gonna have to involve all the senses, and it's gonna have to be, I don't know, attractive, interesting, you know, whatever, new aromas, new tastes, like bring fruit in or try different things to keep it interesting, and that, all of that is sensual. So I don't think it's weird. I think that's accepting our the sort of bodily animal part of our nature.
Yeah, it's sort of like our instincts. So I'll tell you guys what Diotima responded to Socrates. So she, when he asked, what's the purpose of love? What's the real purpose of love? She said, it is giving birth and beauty, whether in body or in soul. Those pregnant in body only seek to fulfill physical, superficial desires. They seek to reproduce with another person because this is how they feel that they can live forever and be immortal, by biologically leaving a part of them behind. So someone that's pregnant in body, quote unquote, they're only attracted to other people physically, superficially, because of how they look. So that's what they do. And those that are pregnant in soul, however, instead, they seek to leave behind a legacy, you could say, rather than children, such as art, literature, music, doing something big for your country and you're remembered throughout history, and various other forms of memorable work. So this makes them immortal in a way because people will always remember them for it. So this for Diotima is more valuable and praiseworthy than those who are simply pregnant in body, not producing any work of the soul to leave behind. So what came up when we talked about this in class, and I thought it was interesting, is however, there haven't been several cases where people who have left behind some kind of legacy have been known to perhaps not have been the best person. I don't know if you guys can think of anyone like that. Should we always admire and remember someone who has done something big in history, regardless of what type of person they were? So should we separate the art from the artist? Can you think of anyone in history like this? What do you guys think?
I feel
think?
Like we kind of talk about this on every episode. Yeah, I mean, I feel like you have to just take a full account of everything in a way, but I separate the art from the artist. Like, I even have people who I like as artists who I know personally who I don't like personally, like in comedy.
Really?
A true story.
What
I'm
do
not
going to
say anymore, obviously, but I'm just saying that, you know. But like I just do that because I just feel like that's noble to the art as an artist to kind of separate like the art from the artist, you know. I feel like that's noble to the art to do that. Like you shouldn't let human error get in the way of artwork. I don't know. Am I crazy for thinking that?
No, not at all.
What I would just my understanding of what diatema means is that to leave a legacy that is truly beautiful is not just about aesthetic beauty, but it's bound up with goodness. To leave behind something that is beautiful and good, the person who's leaving this legacy has to have a beautiful and good soul. So it's a very high standard. So people like Socrates or maybe Plato himself are included in this category, but maybe a good artist is not good enough. You know, maybe Picasso, Nayansi asked about an example. Picasso, for what I understand, was a very crude womanizer and, you know, very misogynistic and so on. So you would have an example of a great plastic artist who nonetheless wasn't a very admirable person in that regard. And I think on Diotima's standard, that doesn't count. The art alone doesn't count as a great legacy. There has to be something more substantively good behind it. I don't know if that's too hard for human beings to accomplish, but it's a very high standard that she sets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think she put out a lot in that statement. It was very interesting that the way she spoke of the physical in such a shallow light.
Yeah.
Like, and I thought that was weird because without the physical, you can't produce the legacy. You can't produce the art. You know, the desire to leave a physical legacy is that's a legacy in itself. That's the legacy of the continuation of life. That's how all this even exists in the first place. So without that desire to leave a physical presence, we all cease to exist, period. And that's technically not our legacy. That's technically the legacy of you can say God, Mother Earth, or life itself. But that's very important. So you can't disconnect the physical. And I think that's kind of I don't know. There's some reason people like to downplay the physical for some reason, but the physical is very, very important.
I think
and
so.
Then
too.
You're talking.
I was just agreeing with you.
You think so too?
Yeah.
And then we're talking about legacies and separating the artists from their work or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's like y'all saw the movie Malcolm X. Remember that movie?
Yeah, we saw that one. Don't
there
we?
Was a line in it where Brother Bangs he said, "A man's good deeds far outweigh his bad ones."
Mm-hmm.
He said,
"Or is it the other way around?"
Malcolm X said, and then Malcolm X said to him, one hand washes the other. And Brother Bangs, the two-bit hustler. And then Brother Bangs said, watch it. That had nothing to do with it, but that part was funny to me. but if you really go through history, nobody's perfect. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Everybody has some sort of darkness to it. But then when you look at the accomplishment of some people, I didn't think of it in necessarily art, but I was thinking of it more in you know, the political scope of it. Like, I mean, look at Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah.
Who's the author of the Declaration of Independence. In its original draft, he said this slavery shit got to go. And he owned slaves at that very time.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they
had kids with them.
The Continental Congress and they edited and changed it, he still had the slaves. He didn't fight back. He just owned his slaves and that was it. So you can even look at George Washington, the founder of the country.
Mm-hmm.
These people were literally fighting for free and equal, for free freedom and equality while owning human beings. Now, if you look at the document of the Declaration of Independence and what America is so-called supposed to stand for, it's clearly ugly that they were contradictory in that. But if you ever took the chance to read the Declaration of Independence, it's actually a beautiful document. And it really outlines how do we have a fair society. And you read through this thing and then you come to where we are now. It's like that's the basis of what we're pushing for and fighting towards in America. Had we not had that document, I don't know what we would be trying to create in America. Who's to say without that document would slavery have ceased to exist? Would women have the rights that they have now? Without that piece of paper, I mean, I don't know. So you do clearly have the bad things, but you also have this great accomplishment. You can separate them, but they're still the same person. So I think you kind of got to look at the whole thing. I mean, we can even bring that current and compare it to Joe Biden, you know, who's author of the crime bill.
I know
bill.
What you're about to say. Go ahead. Yeah.
He's the author of the crime bill. I mean, he's the author of a lot of really bad legislation. You know what I mean? You can technically say because of his crime bill, which helped to accelerate and increase mass incarceration and police presence in minority communities. You can also point to say that he was a contributor to the police brutality. Yet, people found a way to overlook that, and he's still president. You know what I mean? So I just think that you have to look at the whole picture. In this particular, sure, all that shit was fucked up, but in this particular moment, I feel like people felt that he would be good to I guess, lead the country. But had they looked at the other stuff, I guess it'd still be capital attacks and stuff like that.
Going back to the Constitution, I think from the Otima's perspective, the Constitution is a beautiful and good work, but it's perfectible, and that's why Frederick Douglass, W.E.B. Du Bois, and then many other African Americans, men and women, have had to make sure that the framework that was created with the Constitution benefits African Americans. And that has been a very difficult thing to do. So there was a beautiful legacy there, but it wasn't perfect, and it needed perfection, and that's the legacy that all these other figures have left behind. So I don't know. I think that's kind of interesting, and also from that philosophical perspective, lawmakers, legislators are different than politicians. Politicians are interested in power. Lawmakers or legislators are interested in justice, and that's in our political system. The division doesn't work as clearly, but it's very difficult. It's very different to wield power than to frame justice, and the first one is not very admirable. The second one is, I think. Anyway, just talking like from Plato's perspective.
Yeah, but the way America works, it's almost like they legislate power. You know what I mean? The way they design the laws to benefit certain groups and disbenefit other groups. So it's like, and in the modern context, like you said, the two are blended. Maybe in the pure philosophical poetic explanation of the two, that would apply. But in the actual workings, they legislate power every day. That's what everything always about.
I think in the symposium, what the Otima means is that the true lovers, the people who truly excel in Eros, are the people who love the good, not power, but the good. And those are very few. Most people are interested in power, not in justice or truth or goodness. So that's why it's so difficult to be a good legislator or a good political leader, because your commitment has to be with goodness, not with power.
But then that even gets difficult, because then goodness and justice, it becomes a matter of perspective. You know what I mean? Sitting from different seats, what's good and what's just looks different from different perspectives, and that's clearly one of the the crashes we have down in Washington.
Yeah, that's another thing. We have different beliefs about what's good and what's just. I think, unfortunately, maybe we don't agree on all of that yet. But yeah, it's hard. I think it's hard to find someone throughout history that hasn't done anything wrong that we remember. Or I can't think of any. Well, unless
Jesus, other than Jesus. Yeah. What about Mother Teresa?
The more we know about them, the less perfect they are.
Yeah, right? True.
So, it's that level of perfection. I agree. Like that sort of level of perfection is not attainable. For me, what I tend to try to think when it comes to historical figures is, were they better, more admirable persons at the end of their lives than at the beginning? You know, even if they made mistakes, did they recover from them? Did they learn something so that they could have fairer or more just views or attitudes after they made the mistakes? And it's not perfection, but the effort to improve that seems admirable to me.
Yeah, that would be
and
worse.
Also, Michelle Obama and Beyonce are in fact perfect. So
I agree.
Modern time.
Yeah, I can't think of any.
And Republic. Yeah, I know it's nothing. They're literally perfect. Like I don't even know what to say.
Well, that's interesting though. It has to do with the symposium because the status of women or the role of women and whether women can be ascending towards beauty and goodness is a question in the symposium. And one interesting fact is that Diotima is the only woman character and she's the wisest. So in a very, in a society where women were considered intellectually lesser to men, Plato chose to write a woman as the wisest. So it's interesting because Juan is mentioning two women as the ones that would be his sort of ideals of perfection. Maybe there's something to it. I don't know. But I find it interesting that in the symposium, the wisest person is a woman. And yeah. That's noteworthy. Yeah.
Sorry, guys. Yeah, we're the smartest ones.
Okay, but no argument.
I'm definitely not arguing.
Women create life. That's like hard. That's a lot of work.
I'm not arguing any of this.
All right. So
they're
then
a wise man.
So I'll move on to Diotima's next point. And Diotima then goes on to explain the ascent or ladder of love. So this is how she sort of guides Socrates as to how he could accomplish the good life, and that we must all go through in order to live the good life and reach true happiness. So these are the steps that she mentions, and she starts by saying that we usually start off loving one particular body, and we're, as we mentioned earlier, we're sexually attracted to them, we're erotically attracted to them, and we want one specific body.
Does that mean one body type? Or one person?
One person, okay. Yeah. And then...
That's a bad question for me to ask, right?
Nah, she don't look like this.
Are we talking about the whole body type? Like everyone who has that bottle? Or are we talking about one person? Or could you have two body types? Do you like the thick and the thin? No.
Oh, my God.
I'm just joking. Okay, I went too far on it. Okay.
So one body, whatever body it may be. And then... after that, you realize that you can love more than you see. Start seeing the beauty in everybody, and you start loving everybody for what their body is. So, you sort of move past just looking at the beauty in one person, but you start seeing the beauty in everyone. And after that, you realize, well, something that everyone shares or everyone has is the soul and goodness in them and knowledge in them, and that's probably something that I should look for more because it's something that will never change, or will be there, and is sort of metaphysical. It's not something physical that will.
It'll be eternal, right?
Yeah.
More eternal.
More eternal, I guess. Yeah. And then after that, after you realized that you could love everyone's soul, you start appreciating and loving laws and institutions. So you appreciate them because they were set up by good people, and you see that they're bringing about goodness in the world, ideally.
Hopefully.
And then after that, love for knowledge. So you appreciate learning, growing, constantly questioning things and not remaining stagnant. So you are constantly growing and learning, like Socrates was always trying to do, and asking questions and arguing with people, but hopefully not in a negative way. And lastly, you have love for beauty itself and for love itself. And that's sort of like the top level that is the top level for her, where you sort of love the essence of love and of beauty itself. And that's a pretty much metaphysical level. So I wanted to ask you guys, that's a pretty really brief overview of what it is. I recommend all of you to read it if you have the chance. But I wanted to ask you, what do you guys think? Should we aspire to move past our physical desires and look for someone's soul to love instead? Is that what we should be seeking in the first place? And do you agree that following these steps would lead to a good life? So
yeah, I feel like in the back of our heads, like, this is just how most people who are like raised right feel, right? Like that you're supposed to love someone for who they are. That's what you're always taught growing up, right? But I mean,
but does that always happen?
No.
I don't. Yeah. So I think an important question is whether you leave the sensual physical aspect of our nature behind, or whether it comes along. So as we aspire to greater love of knowledge and ultimately of goodness, of justice, of beauty, do we still love the persons around us, and especially do we still enjoy the sensuality, the experience of being in a body and having the experience of touching other people, of smelling, of holding each other, of feeling each other. So there are lots of interpretations about this, but to me, if the ascent means we leave all these other aspects of our nature behind, then it's actually not, I don't find it admirable, and I find it kind of dangerous to despise the body in this way. So I enjoy too much being in the body and being able to touch people who I like and being able to be caressed or to share that sort of sensuality. So for me, this is crucial. And if it's not part of the ascent, then that's not the life I want to live.
Yeah.
Right.
I think it's part of being human. We need physical touch. And
I think it's part of like a good relationship too. I feel like physical touch and like, so, I mean, everyone has a different love language, I guess. You have to find someone who has the same degree of each thing as you. And that's like the whole challenge, I think, in finding the right soul, you know?
But what about like when you get older and stuff?
What do you mean? Like maybe you might change a little bit?
You can still be fresh. You know, still do things to be attractive, like, yeah. You know what I mean? See, Morgan Freeman and George Clooney and all them, they still like dress nice, you know what I mean? They still do the things they do. They not, matter of fact, what's the old Kardashian lady, the mama?
Oh, Kris Jenner,
Jenner, she be fresh, yeah. You know what I'm saying? So it never goes away. The physical attraction, it's still got to start there, no matter what. Like, if you old, y'all both old, so I mean, y'all both on that same measuring stick now. That's all, but you still got to start with that physical attraction.
I feel like
you can't escape it.
If you grow old with someone, I feel like you kind of become one with that person because you've been together for so long, and like you kind of looking at them is like looking in the mirror almost. You know, it's like you're not going to think you're ugly at 50. I mean, some people might, like, depending on your...
God. Halle Berry's still fine at 50. 50 is
no, no, no. I mean, I'm just throwing out a random number. I didn't mean that. I mean, like, you're not gonna look in, but you're not gonna look
it's
in the mirror.
50-year-olds now.
Well, I'm trying to feel young because I'm 32 right now, so I'm using the word the 50 because Halle Berry's still fine and she's 50.
Look at J-Lo.
You know?
50 is fine right now. I don't know what you're talking about.
You're right. It is crazy to think, like, I mean, when I say it's, I'm not used to, actually, I'm used to thinking 50 is old, but now that I'm 32, it's not that old. Like, I'm used to, like, thinking like that growing up, like, when my mother was 50, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, now, I don't know. Yeah, I feel like this show is me like, digging myself deeper with all my statements.
No! No, just 50 is fine now, that's all.
No, I have no problem with 50, by the way. Or even if you're 60 or 70 or 80, you know.
But the point being, I get your point.
Yeah,
but I had to say something about that.
I feel like when you're with someone, it kind of feels like you're growing together and, I don't know, but I can't really talk from experience, obviously, because I'm still fine and stuff, and so are you. So.
Oh my god. But
that's just my theory and how I hope it goes.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's another piece. Sorry, Quan. There's an essay by the American writer Ralph Waldo Emerson. The essay, the title is "Love," and it has a version of this ascent of love. But one that is lived by a couple that meets when they're young and they marry and they live their whole lives together. But the way Emerson describes it is more as life goes on, they're more like companions or friends who help each other along in their individual growth. But you don't get the sense that there's a whole lot of eroticism, a whole lot of intimacy, sexual intimacy or bodily intimacy between them anymore. And I don't know, but I find that very boring. That's not what I want. I think what I see in some older people, older than me, is that there are ways to keep living eroticism in a physical way, in a bodily
it way. It must be. Like they say retirement homes are where the most STDs are. Did you know that?
I don't know. The highest rates of STDs
in communities are all in like old folks' homes because they don't wear no one wears condoms either because they're not afraid of getting pregnant.
I didn't know that's what that was for.
Yeah, for so sure. Imagine because Socrates sort of does say this. It could be interpreted in many ways, but I do feel like he is kind of saying this, that you sort of have to leave that physical part behind. So I don't know. Go ahead.
I mean,
it's presented as a virtue, like in the last few scenes in the symposium, Socrates has this exchange with a younger man that he's attracted to, but he won't have sex with Alcibiades. And it's presented as if this were a virtuous thing to do, as if this is something that shows that Socrates is only interested in the soul of Alcibiades and not in his body. Socrates is the older man, Alcibiades is the younger man. But I don't know why that should be admirable, honestly. Like I think there is a despising of the body, in spite of all the wisdom of the symposium, that I don't like.
Well, if you think about all the despising of the body and the love me for my soul, you would have to assume that how you say her name again? Dia, how you say her name?
Oh, Nyanti. Oh, Diotima.
No, huh?
Diotima.
You would have to assume that Diotima is probably ugly. You know what I mean? She's probably a very unattractive person for there to be such an emphasis on, no, don't forget the body. The body don't matter. It's only about the soul. Love me in here. Don't love me right here, you know, on the face or whatever. Because it's unavoidable as human beings. It has to start at that point of physicality. Now, you could also look at it when they say it has to grow beyond that for lasting relationships. I get that, you know what I mean? As far as you're saying, a couple can grow older together and it becomes more of a companionship or a friendship type of thing or life partner type of thing. I can understand in that context saying, hey, eventually you do have to grow and just love the soul, but it has to start with the physical though. It can't, you can't just walk up to somebody and be like, yo, you got a beautiful soul, let's go to dinner. Like, that's just not, you know, the realistic process.
Yeah, imagine that. That's how people got together. Like, they looked up in a newspaper, local hero saves cat from, oh, we got to call this person up, see what they're doing Friday night.
That's a good soul
right there. You know,
Harvey had a soul credit score.
I'm not trying to see a soul.
At the same time, though, I feel like, you know, here's a good example of this. Like, you see these, like, older dudes who date, like, 20-year-old chicks. Like, I could see how that's fun as, like, a man, like, being 60 and dating someone, like, who's, like, in their 20s. But I would feel lonely at the same time in that relationship, right? Because I feel like we wouldn't really have anything to talk about. Like, she wouldn't really get me. It'd just kind of be, like, some kind of a weird maid.
Not necessarily, but if you're bonding with somebody, you're letting them get to know you. You're introducing them to your world, and you're seeing their world. So I don't think you're just gonna be like, "We talk every day, but this bitch still don't get me." You know what I'm saying? Like, she's gonna understand after a while once y'all communicate. So that grows, you know. She might not understand your aches and pains, but that'll be that.
I mean, as like someone who's 32, I probably don't understand like half the type of stuff that's like going on in like people my dad's age types like lives and stuff, certain like types of issues they tell me about, like the way that they look back 20 years on life is just a lot different than like the way I would right now. And the way that I do even is way different than even like my little cousin who's only like 10 years younger than me, you know?
But there's also there's always that commonality of just human experience. You know what I mean? Sometimes every once in a while, like I'll talk to like the women in my family, like my mom or my aunts, and they'll just say something and I'll be like, are you acting like a girl right now? You know what I mean? Because you see them as your mother and your aunt. You're like, are you acting like a girl right now?
Wait, I have to elaborate what you mean. Like, you mean like something like you acting like a girl you'd like fight with, like your sister?
Just something small. Like I might talk to my mom sometimes, and you know I always get on her like, mom, you know the phone works two ways or whatever. And then I'll call her, and then she's like, yep, you don't never call me, and I'm like, you never call me. But then I realize that she's saying that this is her saying she wants to be thought about. She wants somebody to pick up the phone and give her a ring. And I'm like,
I see what you're saying.
Yeah. I'm like, you're my mother. You're not supposed to do that. That's what girls do. But so once I realized that, I'm like, oh, the human experience, it doesn't really change. You know what I'm saying? You might look at somebody differently because they look differently on the outside of whatever position in life is, but humans are human, period. So that whole age difference, it might be, you might have a memory of like, I remember when we went to the moon or some shit like that. I was 3 or some shit like that, but beyond like specific memories, the experience is the same.
Yeah, I think there can be connections between, I think what Joshua is calling attention to is that for a relationship to be sustainable, there needs to be a connection of the soul or of the mind, however you want to put it. But I don't think it's necessarily determined by age. Maybe it's more likely to find with somebody around your age, but I agree with Quan that there can be compatibilities that are very deep and are not necessarily to do with generation.
I guess that's true. I shouldn't talk in generalities about certain. Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying in general. Yeah. I'm not saying that you can't date someone who's like a way different age or anything like that. It's impossible. But I'm just saying, like, in my, if it was me personally, my own personal anecdote, I'd kind of feel lonely because, like, I'd feel like we wouldn't the same nostalgia wouldn't affect us in the same way and stuff. Shit like that. Some dumb shit like that is important to me for some reason. I don't know why.
You right? Feel like you wouldn't be able to share experiences with them?
Like certain experiences. Oh, I remember that song being like that and how it was so great. Like, you know.
I have a question though about something we were talking about earlier, because it seems that the physical is necessary for an erotic relationship to be sustainable. But does it have to come first? Like, I think it can happen that people are first friends or first colleagues or, you know, first in some sort of intellectual or more spiritual connection, and the attraction develops later. I think the attraction is necessary. At some point, there has to be a spark. Somebody, you know, both have to say, oh, I want to be spending time with this person, more and more intimacy. But I don't necessarily think it has to come first. Maybe it can develop later. At least I think it, you know, that has happened to me when I was younger. Maybe I had, you know, I would have a friendship that would develop later into an attraction, but it wasn't necessarily the other way around. I don't know. I'm raising the issue because I think it's a possible experience.
I feel like different people have different love routines, you know, like depending on their experience and stuff. And I feel like even like the way we met, it was like like the way that like I was like, I like to meet people. And I feel like it's like the type of way you like to meet people. We're both kind of like loner type people. too.
What?
I think we're loners. we made a good connection, you know, like. I feel like there are different people who have just like their own like formulas of starting it, and you're going to just meet the match that has like that same kind of idea of like the same formula, and it could be different. Some people just like to get super intimate right away. Some people are super afraid of that, and then there's for both sides for both of those, you know, and they might wait months and stuff. You want to hear a crazy anecdote? This actually is someone I met in common. I won't say actually their name or where I met them, but... I knew a girl.
But you met him in comedy.
Yeah, it's in comedy. I have to say it now because I stopped myself. So So she told me that she had a boyfriend of 4 years, no physical touch at all, like
what?
Nothing past kissing, nothing on second base. She's like a virgin. She was like proud
of
it.
Was she super religious?
She wasn't real. She I think she was used to be religious, but isn't. But she still was very like sacred about that.
Mm.
Like, to me, I think that guy is a trooper. I hope he gets, like, he deserves, like, the best woman for his next relationship. They were, like, taking time apart, like, after, like, 4 years of no touching or physical attraction. I didn't want to go in and say anything, like, inappropriate or, like, say, why don't you just call him up and just try it once? I didn't want to say anything like that, but, like, it was, like, something that threw me for a loop, you know? It definitely, like, was the red flag that made me not, like, try to pursue something romantic
or whatever.
I don't think she was because she.
Know.
Well, she talked.
I don't know if
that's
the right term.
I don't think she was because she like talked about like sexuality and like comedy and stuff. But it definitely shocked me. But like I don't know. It's not like the worst thing in the world. There's dew for every blade of grass, as my dad says. Like there's someone for that. Mm. You know, there's a guy in church.
There's
who's
nobody
like
for that. They weren't in a relationship.
Yeah, I feel
maybe she didn't know it, but they weren't. She was in a relationship, but he wasn't. If that's what she was doing, they weren't in a relationship. Period.
Maybe maybe the guy that's for that's just the guy that makes her feel extra special and like makes her feel like she could trust him enough to finally.
For 4 years, nah, nobody's. Doing that for 4 years.
I don't know.
Baby,
I'm not.
I don't
you're
touch.
Not, but there might
that's,
be someone
that's,
else
that's
who
not
does.
Real.
No, like nah, my mom
that,
when
that
I was growing up.
Every law of nature.
I grew up in a single mother house, and like and my mom like went to like church and stuff, and like she would date guys with no sex and stuff. As far as I knew.
As far as you know, exactly.
But we lived in a little apartment. I would know, I feel like. I feel like I would at least walk in on it at
hey
one
man,
point.
As far as
oh
you
my
know,
God.
I'm not going to say that's your mom, but as far as you know.
I'm just saying there are a lot of people in the church who don't do it at all.
No,
I think.
Before marriage.
People say that in comedy, but I don't, in church,
no,
I don't feel
they
like.
Say that
I was like, didn't do it in church when I was growing up.
Everybody was having sex at church.
I was. How they left me out? I thought I was a good looking guy. Now I don't know.
When I used to be a party promoter back in my hometown, right? You have the club on Saturday night, and then you go to church on Sunday morning. It would be the same exact crowd.
That's true. Yeah.
Mm, wow. Same, literally, no different. You like, yo, You know, we were just dancing or whatever we was doing, and now I see you here. I'm like, you here?
What? I was just going to the wrong church, I think.
But also, I was there too. But look at me, I was a sinner in there too. So it's like, there are no good people in church, bro. It doesn't exist. You saw Kirk Franklin call his son a motherfucker today. Like, ain't no good people.
It depends. There are certain churches that are very different from others, and they're like crazier than others. Like, there's some churches in the South that no one in the congregation even drinks alcohol at all.
There's no such thing. Yeah, I mean,
my mom doesn't like. My mom, for instance, gave up alcohol. She doesn't drink alcohol at all.
Just not in front of people. There's no such thing.
No, my mother doesn't drink alcohol. I always try to get her to, like, she lets us drink it in front of her. She won't have a sip of wine with dinner.
Right, but the rest of the people at her church drink alcohol.
No, I bet you. I bet you a lot of them don't. Like there are certain sects of Christianity that don't believe in it, and they don't believe in certain things, I think. So I think that there are probably people out there, especially if you leave America, think about, like, going to, like, some country where it's so much more conservative. Like, think, say, like, you're going to somewhere, like in the Middle East or something like that. Like, I don't know. I don't think people – I mean, I'm not saying – I'm sure it's modern – in like those countries, and there's Tinder probably in those countries, and there's modern dating, but I don't think they're collecting bodies like people are in New York City. Or
is that what you think?
What?
Human beings. What? With the sexual nature.
I think it's culturally inspired, and it's very. I think it's environmentally inspired.
It's natural. It's natural. It's not culturally inspired. It's natural. That is a natural response that you get to want to engage in sex with somebody else. So you cannot defy nature.
I'm not saying that sex isn't natural, obviously, but I'm just saying that, like, different people have various appetites, and I think that that's based on your environment and like how you develop with it.
I'm saying if you deny, you can't deny nature. That's all I'm saying.
Oh yeah, I'm not saying
you can have your little personality. Yeah. But you can't deny nature.
But some people, though, just are born naturally to have just... That's just my point here. We're arguing about people's sex drives here on Butt Wide.
Well, I do think that the environment and how you grew up has probably something to do with it. So I see what you're saying there because, yeah, it depends how you grew up. Maybe you were taught to never have sex or something and that until you got married and stuff like that. So I don't know. It depends on everyone's situation. But I do think we're naturally driven to want to, you know.
I think most people are, though, Quan. Like, don't worry. Like, anyone on those dating apps, don't worry, Quan. They're not going to make you wait 4 years or nothing like that. I don't think so. Like, this is just a special case. And I think that there are other probably special cases out there. I'm not saying that there's like a whole group of people like out there running around like that, or that it's like a general thing.
No, agree. I just think those people are mistaken for what a relationship is.
Yeah, I see where you're coming with that and stuff. Especially, I mean, well, so I think part of that comes from like incompatibility. You think about how incompatible someone is based on their. Based on such a different view on something that you look at in such a different way too, you know. That's just my most diplomatic way to respond.
No, I hear that. Who's to say? That might be some people out there like, girl, I want to wait 4 years. So,
I mean, I will say this: this person is a super gorgeous person, like beautiful, perfect 10. Like, not like she wasn't like the girl whose room smelled like shit. Like, that girl's probably like an 8.
She wasn't a shitty bitch.
Well, it could be. I'm not a psychologist, but it could be a. Sometimes it's a pathology. You know, there are histrionic personalities that are not interested in fulfilling the sexual encounter, but are interested in knowing that they can seduce whoever is around them. So they will keep them interested, but will never have sex with them. And in some cases, I'm not talking about this specific person, but it can be a pathology. So if you're on the wrong end of that, you can suffer quite a lot if you are thinking something is going to happen that will never happen. So
that's like a person that read like a super Steve Harvey book, huh?
Yeah, someone that just wants to seduce people. Just,
beyond
just
the 90
to seduce
days,
them,
that's like,
but never does anything.
Yeah,
because he had a game for 90 days. Because
it feels like a challenge or something like that.
Just because it pleases them, right, Daniel?
Yeah, it's they derive pleasure from knowing I can seduce this person anytime I want, but my interest is in keeping them around, not in having sex with them. And so, you know, and so the person who's on the other end, if they think there's a true hope of something, they can suffer for 5 years, 10 years, however, they could spend their whole lifetime thinking something's going to happen. So, but that's a pathology.
Oh my God. Imagine.
That's how sugar daddy started.
Maybe.
It kind of is similar, except it's sugar daddying is a more straightforward version of that, more or less.
Could be, yeah. I mean, all sorts of wicked or, convoluted things happen in this erotic dealings, I guess.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're having a lot of fun talking about this. This we always get into it on this podcast, but we are kind of out of time here. So let's just go around. You could plug whatever you're going to be in or wherever people could follow you. If you want to give one last final point, feel free. We could start with you, Quan, and then we'll end with Daniel then.
Only final point is you can't deny the laws of nature. And as far as plugs, you can find me on Instagram at Quan Wiggins. QuanWiggins.com is available, which has all my information as far as shows and upcoming content. And you can find me in New York with a mask on 6 feet away from people.
Well, for me, I would say erotic intimacy is one of the most beautiful human experiences. So trying to live it well, live it happily, live it fully is a constant experiment for all of us. But it's one of the most beautiful things there is. And that's why the symposium and other works are so enduring, because they make us have these kinds of conversations. For me, my Instagram is Dani, D-A-N-I dot Cambad, C-A-M-B-A-D. And I just post pictures of nature there. But if you wanna follow, I do. You will find also that I write a blog sometimes in English, sometimes in Spanish about philosophical things. So you can find me there.
Yeah.
Awesome. And you can follow me at Miss Nayanci, MSNAYANCI. And you can follow our podcast at BWT Podcast.
And you can follow me at Gosh Carter. That's GOSHCARTER. And that's on all platforms. Also, we're bringing Northern Discomfort back to the stand. Actually, it might not be called Northern Discomfort. We might rebrand the show. But my show To the Stand Comedy Club is coming back. Hit me up. I'll give you the first people who are loyal listeners to this podcast who hit me up. I will actually hook you up with at least... I'll hook up, you know what? I'm going to hook up my lucky number is 12. I hope I have at least 12 people email me. The 12th person who emails me gets free tickets to our first show at the stand. We're going to have a really dope lineup. It'll be dope. Follow me at Gosh Carter. Follow us at BWT Podcast. And that was our show. Thank you so much for coming out, everyone. Peace.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.